This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome to the Morning Beat. We've got a great show for you. Another blockbuster night at the Democratic National Convention. Later on in the show, we've got our political expert, Jarrett Hill, joining us to recap day three and preview the final night. Joe Biden will be taking the stage tonight, giving his speech. He's got some big shoes to fill.
I'm not going to lie. I'm a little bit nervous because I feel like, you know, choosing Kamala was great. She's so well-spoken.
Yep.
We've watched Joe Biden really struggle. Having conversations.
I'm not going to buy into that narrative.
I
get what you're saying. I don't think he struggles. I've seen some really inspirational speeches from him.
I do. I feel like I've heard audio clips and I've seen things where I'm like, what is he talking about? There's been moments where it's kind of been like, okay, stop. That's weird. I definitely believe that. So I will be watching to see if I see that.
I see something different. Listen, there's no getting around the fact that he's 77 years old. He'd be the oldest president ever elected for a first term if he's elected. I get that. I understand that. I also see a man who's very kind, very compassionate, who's in a stark contrast to what we have now, and a man who's had a stutter his entire life, who's had to take speech courses to learn how to speak properly.
Yeah, but I think he's given better speeches.
Sure.
I'm not talking about a stutter, of course. And I do think he's been through a lot and wonderful. We've talked about it all week and we've heard.
Well, I feel
like as of, you know, over the time that he's wanted to become president, there have just been some, you know.
Look, the guy is known for gaffes. I get that. You could pull any audio from any day of our show and hear us stuttering and not being able to collect our thoughts either. And when you speak that often and there's that much recording out there, you can make anybody sound like anything. We've been on reality shows. We know what the media can do.
He's running for president. I'm not dissing him.
No, I get
I'm
that.
Just being
I get
realistic
that.
With how I feel.
I know, and he hasn't spoken yet. So if tomorrow, after he sounds terrible tonight...
He might sound great.
If he does, then we have the discussion tomorrow. I want to give the guy a chance to go and be successful at his Democratic National. This is the first he has run for president three times, and this is the first time he's actually received the nomination. I'm going to back up, but I do think he has huge shoes to fill. We've got Michelle and Barack Obama giving amazing speech. Gabby Giffords, we've got some audio
Michelle
from her.
Obama, you cannot touch.
She's amazing.
Elizabeth Warren,
I was like, I want to go bake cookies with her and have a conversation and just hang out with her. There were so many great.
Even Kamala, we were talking about
Kamala's
this morning.
Kamala's amazing.
She's got this tone in her voice that you feel. You said it's almost sometimes like she's about to start to cry.
Like her voice is about to crack and she's almost ready to cry.
But it's this emotion that you're like, I love you.
She's got some empathy to her. And I loved her story she shared about her mother and her sister and her stepdaughter. She's a blended family. I think that's really fantastic. I also will say, as a diehard Hillary supporter, if you don't know Hillary's story, if you haven't followed her career for decades like I have and know what she's like in a small setting, in a town hall setting, I get why people didn't vote for her after watching her last night. I did not think her speech was very moving. I think she was a little bit bitter, and I think she has every right to be. I get it, but I felt like last night was not the place to do that, and I get it. I watched her, and I was like,
But for conversation's sake, and I know that you love her, but I do think, you know, of course you're running for president. You won the popular vote, all of these things. Trump is now president. But at some point, do you stop... Can you stop being bitter and address the American public?
Yeah, I don't
like,
know.
It happens.
I've been so bitter about things. I wrote a whole book about it. I mean, she did get more votes than any candidate in the history of presidential politics, Republican or Democrat. No Republican has ever gotten as many votes as she got, but
like
she still lost.
At some point, people lose all the time. Look at me. I lost Carrie Underwood.
I know, but you lost because more people voted for her. 3 million more people voted for Hillary. So she's got a chip on her shoulder. I get it. I didn't think her speech was that great last night. We're going to break this all down today. We have a lot of fantastic audio for you sprinkled throughout the show. We're going to be having these conversations all morning long. So make sure you stick around for all of that. But first, Michaela Gordon, should we get to the business?
Let's do it.
News on the beat?
Yeah, babe. You got it. So Senator Kamala Harris officially accepted her historic vice presidential nomination on a night filled with heavy hitters at the DNC. The most talked about words came from former President Barack Obama, who set aside an unwritten presidential rule to not directly attack the current office holder and unleashed a scathing rebuke of President Trump's governance. Obama said he'd hoped Trump would take the presidency seriously and develop some reverence for democracy, but Obama said he never did.
For close to 4 years now, he has shown no interest in putting in the work, no interest in finding common ground, no interest in using the awesome power of his office to help anyone but himself and his friends.
All right. Now, Senator Elizabeth Warren and Hillary Clinton also spoke during the third night of the virtual event, with the latter issuing a strong warning to voters to make their voices heard. Don't forget, Joe and Kamala can win 3 million more votes and still lose, Clinton said. Take it from me.
I saw a model the other day that they could win by 5 million votes and still lose.
Yeah.
Ugh.
It's tough. All right, in other news, states across the U.S. are now seeing a decline in coronavirus cases, and we'll continue those conversations as we go on with the show today. But let's get into a little bit of some weather. It's going to be hot in New York today with a high of 82, which is nice. No rain. That's good.
Yeah.
89 in L.A. today, a high of 112 in Vegas, a high of 114 in Palm Springs, a high of 94 in Houston, and 85 in Kansas City.
89 in L.A. this week is cool.
That's cool compared to what we had. Oh,
yeah.
It's been hot. All right, give us a vibe of the day.
You are a magnet to incredible opportunities. Life is about to get very good for you.
Oh, wait, say that again?
Life's about to get very good for you.
Honey, we love a vibe like that. All right, you guys, well, coming up, we're doing a story. How rich is too rich? We always talk about monopoly money and trillions, billions, millions. What does it all really mean? And how could people really benefit if these trillionaires would hand some over? Coming up next.
Michaela Gordon, what would you do with $2 trillion?
Oh, my God. What wouldn't I do?
Right? Can you? Well, can
I'd
you
do
wrap,
everything. $2 trillion.
How much money do you think that is?
I don't know. Monopoly money. I told you, after like a couple million, I'm like, no, 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 whatever. Live it up.
Can't even imagine
rich.
It.
I'm rich. I get, one time I won $500 on a bingo thing. And I was like, I'm rich now. Do you understand? Like, I couldn't imagine trillions
billions. If you take the number 1 million and multiply it by itself, by another million, that equals 1 trillion. And this is twice as much as that. And that is how much Apple is now worth. $2 trillion.
Oh my God.
Apple is worth. Keep in mind, the stimulus package that was just released a couple of months ago that's supposed to save America was $1 trillion.
Well, I'm going to be honest with you. Now, I would love to be rich and have a lot of money. And I would be so obnoxious and excited. However...
No, you wouldn't. You'd be very generous. I know you. You'd be very, very generous.
I would be very generous, but I would also go buy a real Louis Vuitton
well,
and not the
obnoxious
fake ones
now.
That I have. That's what I'm saying.
So,
I'm like trashy obnoxious. But I will say this. I think it's actually disgusting. I think the fact that I heard Mark Zuckerberg being now well over like $100 billion, I think with Jeff Bezos.
Well,
hearing,
they've all made like tens of billions of dollars off the pandemic.
But, you know, here's the thing. I hit my microphone and I'm sorry. Number two, I feel like once you hit a certain amount of money, like, I don't think you should have your freedoms taken away, but like, we can't limit it. Like, what are you going to do with $2
trillion? Well, they're the first American company ever to hit $2 trillion.
Well, yeah, because they're Apple and everyone needs their products and they're in the digital field. But like, also, somebody could really use $100,000.
Okay, so this is interesting. So, well, just for reference, Amazon and Microsoft, they are both worth about $1.7 trillion. So they're not too far off. But to put this into context for you, how much money Apple has made recently? Right. And we thought Apple was at its prime when Steve Jobs was around. When Steve Jobs passed, many people wondered if Tim Cook could keep this ball rolling after the sales have seemed to decline in recent years. It took Apple from 1976. Was that the bicentennial of America? I believe it was. 1976 to 2018, 2 years ago, to make their first $1 trillion.
Mm-hmm.
They've made another $1 trillion in the past 2 years. That's huge.
Yeah.
That's a big, big number. So if Apple wanted to, this is where my brain goes. I think about helping real Americans because real Americans are struggling right now. Donald Trump often talks about he got his start with a small $1 million loan from his father.
Mm-hmm.
And look where it brought him.
Yeah.
He's either worth $10 billion now or he's negative 10. We don't know. We don't know what his taxes are. We don't know what he's actually worth. But that's his story. That's the beginning of his story arc towards the presidency. He got a small $1 million loan.
Right.
So let's imagine for a moment if Apple just set aside half their money, just the money they've made in the last 2 years, $1 trillion. If they did that, they could make 1 million millionaires in the United States.
Yeah.
Yeah. 1 million millionaires.
But I don't understand why that's not a thing. I think that, like, you have to be realistic. Sure, you earned that money and you worked really, really hard. Yeah. But there are people that have done work you would never do.
But the people working for the company helped him earn that money. And the people who buy the products, like you and I and Justin, like, we helped them earn that money.
Yeah, 1,000%. But also, when you get to $2 trillion, it would take you over 33,000 years, I believe. So if you spend $1 million a day, you still could not get through your entire fortune.
There's no way.
33,000 years. Now, you tell me why you can't. Is that the right number? That's not the right
3,
number?
3,000 years.
Oh, okay. Well, stop. Okay, well, stop.
See, she's 3, good with numbers. But still, I mean, what are you going to do?
Years. You spend $1 million.
The Earth probably won't be here in 3,000 years.
But that's what I'm saying. And you know what we've learned in this stimulus package? And I'll say even within my own home, finances are so difficult. Finances, I think, are make and breaks in relationships, friendships, within your own relationship with yourself. You need money to be able to buy things, necessities. And when you've taken that away, particularly in this pandemic, people who were working just like normal day people, they did never expect this. The government really has not handled it very well. And then you've got people hitting over $2 trillion. Well, that's offensive.
They're arguing that they've stopped the $600 extra unemployment payments right now. They're trying to say maybe $300 or $400 if we get around to it. For real Americans, you know, we were out feeding our families with LA Unified School District the other day as part of our initiative here at Channel Q, and we saw in real time these people just waiting in the sun for a plastic baggie with a cheese sandwich and some milk and an apple.
Yeah.
Those are real Americans.
That's what
they need. Those are citizens. And I think this is a really important conversation. I think we should continue it tomorrow. This idea of a universal basic income. Andrew Yang ran on this, but other countries have tried this in recent years. Just to put this all into perspective again for you, let's just even break that number down, because $1 million is a lot to give somebody. We don't need to make a million Donald Trumps.
No, but you could do $100,000.
Okay, perfect. $100,000. If you gave Americans $100,000, you could give that amount of money to 10 million Americans. That is just under 3% of the entire country. Do you know how many lives could be changed, how many small businesses could be started, how much debt could be erased? And that's just the money they've made in 2 years.
Honestly, you could take that $2 trillion and erase so much of their school loans and debts. I mean, there's so much you
could
do.
But yet we act like these things are not possible here in America.
Yeah, I think it's ridiculous. And I'll tell you, especially because it has hit me, and my partner financially with this furlough, with people losing their jobs. I will tell you, they would make such a big difference, and it's infuriating.
It gives you the freedom to be who you're supposed to be.
Yeah.
It gives you the freedom to be a full human
yeah.
and to live in your full...
And we have the opportunity to do that, and we don't.
Let's continue this conversation tomorrow. I think
we
should.
Sounds good. All right, well, coming up, what is going to college on campus look like this fall? You probably won't be surprised, but we're going into detail about what you need to know, especially if you or a loved one is going off to college, coming up next.
So a now viral video posted on social media shows a massive gathering of University of North Georgia students at a party this Saturday night. A party! It flooded the lawn, off-campus houses, 2 days before the school year officially began. Now, anybody who's paid any attention whatsoever saw this coming.
Okay, first of all, I was 20, I was 19, and I was also 18 at one point in my life.
Really?
And if in that exact order. And if you think that I don't follow the rules at 32 very well. I didn't follow the rules at 18, 19, and 20 very well. And I'm not making excuses for these kids, but they've been stuck inside. Hopefully, if they were doing it right, for 7 months, now they're going to college, seeing their friends. You really think they're going to stay in their your dorms alone and not drink and party?
No, alone, yes. I could do alone. I could have done alone. If I, because I don't buy that. At 18 years old, if you told me there's a global pandemic and for your the safety of your life and others, you need to stay in your dorm room. And
I wouldn't.
I would have. I would not be. Yeah, I would not be going out to parties at all. I would have been very different. But also, these are adults. You're 18 years old. You're technically an adult. You can do everything. In the, like.
Okay, but also, how many people really? I mean, we put that number 18 in and are like, you're an adult. I had my own apartment at 18. I was living alone at 18.
Sure.
I still needed. I could have used so much more help.
But that is a mental thing because there are people who are in their 40s and 50s who are still not grown up and never actually adult. So,
but we think after 18 years of experience, that
but
is
we
an
see,
adult.
But we see 12, 13 years old. We see Emma Gonzalez fighting for like gun rights or gun safety. And we see like, what's her name? Greta Thunberg. Thunberg fighting to save
but that
the
makes
planet
them exquisite
at age
kids.
12 or 13. But that does. But I think that at 18, 19 years old, you have a, we have enough of an understanding of what this thing is now that you know better. You don't go to large parties. However, at the University of North Georgia, they are testing at over 27% right now positive rate, which is three times higher than the amount acceptable by the CDC and the World Health Organization. At Yale, students there were sent a letter told to expect it to be more like living in a hospital than a dorm this year.
Oh, my God.
And to expect illness and possible death as part of their school year.
Well, first of all, we've talked about this so much. If I were a mother, I would not send my child to college.
No way.
And I don't care if you're 18. If you're in my house and I'm paying the college tuition, even if I'm not, you're staying home. Stay home.
Boston University issued a new policy that allows students who die while attending to receive their degree posthumously. That's wild to me.
I just, you know, it's weird because we were having this conversation. I have a couple friends, one in Santa Clarita, one in Houston, that started sending their kids to school. Like, they're little kids. Like, mm-hmm. one's a kindergartner, and then one is in fifth, and then freshman year, right? So they're like, the ages are different, but they sent them to school. And I was thinking, I don't know. For me, I'm like not comfortable. Like I would, I'm not a parent, so I don't know what that's like. So I would never be like giving parenting advice. For me, I feel like I would be uncomfortable because I wouldn't want to do that. So we're watching elementary kids go to school and they're little germaphobe. They're little germy kids touching everything, being weirdos, which they're supposed to because they're little and it's great. But
they're socializing.
That's why you don't send them because they're gross and they touch everything.
Yeah.
With college students, college for a lot of kids, they're experimenting for the first time with alcohol, sex, drugs.
All
and we've learned when we go to a bar, even at 32, you have a couple drinks in you. I'm sitting on your lap.
You and I hung out a couple months ago at a socially distanced barbecue. By the end of the night, you're on my lap crying to me and talking. And we're like, oh, we probably shouldn't have done that.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you have to know for yourself where you're at.
Yeah,
and then you're sending kids to school.
We're full adults. We're still not. I'm not putting this all on the students. I think that there needs to be a better way to figure this all out. The University of Notre Dame just this week on Wednesday, or yesterday, reported at least 222 confirmed positive cases on campus. They now shut down in-person classes. But they're testing students multiple times a week, and they said if these numbers don't turn around, they have a 17.2% positivity rate at Notre Dame, which again is three times the acceptable number. If things don't turn around, and they're not going to, I don't know what sort of world we're living in where we think that sending kids to college in dorms, that they're not going to go out and party, that they're not going to socialize and try to make new friends, and they're not going to spread this thing like crazy.
Yeah, I think that we've been locked up so long that people are sort of normalizing what's happening out there. And to a degree, I think that you should. I think that you have to have some sort of routine for your mental health. I don't think that includes going back to school and not having an actual plan as far as your children and staff go.
Yeah, because young people, they might not be dying or getting very, very sick at the rates of our older citizens and our more vulnerable population. However, they're the ones spreading it, especially in like the state of Georgia.
But also, we've seen proof that people are dying from COVID that are 18,
yes,
that are little.
Yes, but they're willing to take that risk. They're not seeing the death rate nearly as high as people with pre-existing conditions or over age 60.
But still, I don't want my 18-year-old child or my 10-year-old child to die from COVID because I sent them to school.
But when you were 18 years old, Were you that cautious with your life, or were you taking more chances?
Yeah, and that's the problem. But as a parent, I would think differently.
Yeah,
you know, it's difficult. It's difficult to say. It's going to be a conversation we're going to continue to have because, like you, I think there's going to be a surge come October.
Yeah,
I think we're not through this at all, and
it's hard to wrap your brain around. But we have to do better.
Yeah,
we just have to.
All right, you guys. Well, coming up, it's a great day to check in.
How are we
doing? Thursday.
We're adults. We'll have adult conversation.
Maybe.
I'm sure.
Maybe we will.
Or not. Welcome back to the Morning Beat. We're going to get into our checking in segment in just a moment, but we have some breaking news. Federal prosecutors charge former Trump advisor Steve Bannon and three others with fraud in the border wall fundraising campaign. This is big, big news. 75 days out from the election. We're going to break that down in just a bit in News on the Beat. We'll also be talking to our political expert, Jarrett Hill, later in the show, and I'm sure we're going to have a discussion about this. This literally happened about 20 seconds ago.
Crazy.
We're live. We're very much live.
We're doing it live.
Michaela Gordon, this is our checking in segment.
Yeah.
How are we? We're heading out next week. You're going to get a whole week of best of shows. We're going to take a little vacation. We haven't had one since the pandemic started. You haven't had one in about 2 years.
A vacation?
Yeah. What is that? Who is she?
I've never been on vacation.
Yeah,
so you know this about me. If you guys don't know this, I...
Only working vacations.
Every vacation I've ever been on, anywhere I've been, is because I got hired as a singer or a host. And this is the first vacation that I was like a grown up. And when I said, I booked everything. But I am...
I was so travel agent. I literally booked everything. I booked
everything.
The hotel. I booked flights. I literally booked her car service. Everything.
But listen, I don't know how to do that. When you're in school, they should be teaching you things like that. Because booking,
how to book an all-inclusive hotel?
Listen, sometimes it feels so easy, but yeah. I don't.
Well, I love those
sorts
of things.
How do you find the deals? How do you find? You know, you can really travel, and when we can start traveling again, there's really great ways to travel.
Yeah,
and
travel
and
now
and
is really
expensive.
It's really interesting right now because you have to be very, very cautious. You have to be very adult about every decision you make right now and decide. It's a cost like a risk analysis. Basically, every decision you make right now. I do travel the world a lot, and right now I'm not really doing that like I usually do. You know, I was in Bali right at the beginning of my time here at Channel Q. I went there for a couple of weeks and absolutely loved it. I usually take two big vacations a year, and I was like, we're in this thing. I've been here for what, 8 months now almost?
Yeah.
And didn't realize like, oh, I haven't been on a trip. And we're a little bit burnt out, as I think everybody is right now. Not just with the pandemic, just life in general.
Listen,
you need to give yourself a break every now and then.
I will be honest with you. This pandemic hit. My grandma passed away the same day my dog of 15 years passed away. My partner got furloughed. Like, we are going through it.
Yeah.
This past 8 months. And I normally, you know this about me, would be like, no, I'm still going to work. And sometimes maybe I work as a distraction.
Oh, 1,000%.
You know what I'm saying?
Yep, it's easier just to stay in the bubble and keep going, put your head down and keep grinding.
Keep going.
And
you know,
just
move
forward.
We've been taught that hustler mentality. But I'm really excited. Like, I feel like for the first time, it's a sense of self-love. Like,
well, we didn't get to experience that this year. We didn't get to go to Pride events. We didn't get to, like, hug and party with our loved ones and make new friends and put glitter on and, you know, rain. I did go to one Pride event, but it wasn't quite the same
right.
as what I'm used to. And we don't have that ability to express ourselves psychologically. People are just struggling. We talked about this just a little bit ago. If you missed the conversation, download the radio.com app and listen to the Morning Beat as a podcast. We had a discussion about college kids going back to campus right now and how these COVID cases are spiking because they're having large parties. Well, we don't have that interaction with people anymore, and that is a vital part of the human experience. So we're going to take a week off. We're going to play you a whole week of our best ofs. If you've missed anything, listen all next week. We have some really, really great content for you. Then we'll be back fresh the week after that, going into the fall, you know, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, hopefully
yeah.
with a little bit of a tan.
A whole lot of tan. I'm never
imagine?
Leaving the sun. All right, you guys. Well, coming up, we're having a very interesting conversation and one that's a little triggering. Has a baby become a status symbol for gay men? There's one author who thinks that may be the case. Of course, we have a rebuttal and we'll have that coming up.
We have a fantastic conversation coming up for you in 15 minutes from right now. Has a baby become a status symbol for gay men? We have lots of thoughts. We're going to share those in just a bit. But let's get right to News on the Beat because there's some breaking news right now coming from the Trump administration.
All right, so former White House chief strategist Steve Bannon has been arrested after being charged with defrauding hundreds of thousands of donors through their campaign, We Build the Wall. Now, Bannon, along with three of his associates, were indicted by investigators at the U.S. Southern District of New York on Thursday. They alleged that the group of conservative leaders defrauded donors, and that led to raising more than $25 million to build a wall along the southern border of the United States. According to the press release, prosecutors said Bannon and others defrauded hundreds of thousands of donors to the online campaign by falsely assuring them the organizers were not taking a penny of donation money. Those representations were false, said the indictment. According to the indictment, Bannon took at least $1 million to pay personal expenses. The United States... That's the story.
It's a big deal.
So I'm like, we're doing it live, I'm like,
all coming out of the Southern District of New York, we knew if anybody was going to take down the Trump administration and drain the swamp, it was, ironically, it was going to be the Southern District of New York.
I guess others mentioned in the indictment are Timothy Shea, who in May was announced as the acting administrator of Drug Enforcement Administration, Brian Colfage, an Iraq War veteran, and Andrew Badalato. The story's coming out.
Just as a friendly reminder, Julian Castro, former of Texas, former presidential candidate, just tweeted this 16 minutes ago. Trump staff or associates indicted or convicted since he took office. Paul Manafort, Roger Stone, Michael Cohen, Michael Flynn, Rick Gates, Richard Pinedo, Alex Van Der Zwan, George Papadopoulos, and now Steve Bannon. Quote, only the best people. Direct quote from Donald Trump. You cannot argue facts. And this administration has proven time and time again, not only are they inept, and as President Barack Obama said last night, he's just not capable of rising to the occasion, but he surrounded himself with crooks.
Yeah.
They're just crooks. Yeah. He runs this country as if he's a mob boss, which is how he's run the Trump administration his entire life. Former executives from him have all said the exact same thing.
Yeah.
And this is what we get when we don't involve ourselves in our democracy.
It's true. All right, well, listen, in other news and very sad news, the Cheers bar at Boston's, Faneuil. We talked about this. Hall Marketplace is closing after two decades in business. And it's devastating. The iconic bar is a replica of the set for the popular sitcom Cheers, which aired from 82 to 93. It appears the bar was another casualty of the coronavirus pandemic. It said that the pandemic and lack of assistance from the landlord played into the decision to close. The Cheers bar is set to close on August 30th. The location that originally inspired the iconic series, however, will remain open on Boston's Beacon Street. I don't know I can't see this happening. I really hope it's a situation where somebody comes in and saves the day.
Somebody's going to bar rescue, or maybe John Taffer steps in, or HGTV does the whole thing.
Because this was such an iconic part of television.
There are few theme songs that bring like a sense of nostalgia quite like Cheers.
Oh, yeah.
It was such a good show. I remember being a kid, and Norm, the guy who played Norm, I can't even think of what his name is now, but the guy who played Norm, do you know who it is?
John Ratzenberger?
Yeah. No, not Norm, then the other.
Oh, Cliff.
It was Norm.
Norm was George Wendt.
The heavier set guy.
Yeah, George Wendt.
Yes. So he was the grand marshal of the parade in my hometown in Salina, Ohio, when I was a little kid. I don't know why. I have no idea how they got him. And I remember him waving to everybody, and I was like starstruck. To me, it was the biggest moment in my life as a child. I was like, I want to be around stars someday.
I love that. And now you work with one every day.
Well, I know Justin, he's famous to his fiance and his baby Bennett.
I knew you were going to do that.
How
I hate you.
Dare you.
All right, you guys.
I complimented you.
That was a compliment, just to me. All right, let's do a little weather. It's going to be a high of 85 in Kansas City, a high of 75 in San Francisco, 89 in Miami today. It'll be 111 in Phoenix and 78 in Seattle. Now hit us with a vibe of the day.
You are a magnet to incredible opportunities. Life is about to get very good for you.
I think that's so amazing, and I love it. Now, coming up, has a baby become a status symbol for gay men? This is a little triggering, and we have our thoughts after an author seems to think so. We'll have that conversation coming up next.
I came across an article recently, Michaela Gordon, that sort of got my blood boiling. And this article, this author, she's a filmmaker by the name of Yuval Hadadi. She's Israeli. She claims that having a baby has become a status symbol for gay men. Hmm. Now, she talks about Tom Daley, Sir Elton John, Anderson Cooper. You know, Andy Cohen just had a baby as well. A lot of these prominent gay men now having children. And she says it signifies a certain level of time, money, and ambition for men. She claims that there's now a pressure and expectation for gay men to welcome children. What do you think about this?
Listen, that could very well be true. But that could very well be true for all relationships, right, including heterosexual relationships. I have girlfriends who had children with their husbands to ensure that they would continue getting a check for the rest of their lives. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, like, I had so many friends who grew up that way.
Women will have 3 children with the man that they're married to make sure that if anything ever happened, they would forever be taken care of. So I think in a lot of ways, listen, men want to carry on their name. I think that's a male thing that you would want. And I think that when you're gay men, you want to have a family. I know for my partner and I, we want to have a family. Sure, when you're gay, it takes a little bit longer and it takes more money, but that's not by choice. That's because we have to, because our little parts don't make our own baby.
The suggestion that having a child, a human life that you're going to raise for 18 plus years, is akin to buying a new Rolex or getting a new car for gay men is so wildly offensive to me.
Yeah.
That after so many years, we fought for the right to even love one another, to live together legally. It's so, so offensive. I was looking this up just a moment ago. In foster care in the United States, as of 2018, there are something like 437,000 children in foster care just in the United States. And it costs a lot of money just to adopt kids, which is a whole different conversation. Why does it cost money to adopt kids?
Well, also, first and foremost, by the way, Trump made a law that states are allowed to decide state by state if they want to allow LGBTQ to adopt. So you also haven't made it easy for our community to go in and get the kids that heterosexual people made.
Well, it's cost prohibitive. It's time. And to think that it's just an accessory. Like, I can never think of a human being as an accessory. Yeah, maybe in your 20s you date somebody who might be an accessory. Or maybe you get older and you date somebody younger as an accessory. That's a different situation.
Yeah.
The amount of time and the finances that it takes to raise a human life. Justin knows this. You've been a dad for 6 months.
Seven.
Is it an accessory to you? Right? Or do you just get, or does it just like go to the bathroom on you and wake up and cry all the time and have to eat always?
Yeah, it's the world's hardest accessory to manage, take care of, do all that. It's just laughable that anyone would think, oh yeah, a child's an accessory.
It's just demeaning.
I think that people can think, but I don't disagree with this writer. I do believe that there are families and people that say, I'm going to have a baby to
okay,
have
but
a perfect.
That's no, but different from generalizing.
Thought. But let me finish this thought. I think that people have had children to have children. They put it on their nannies. Their nannies raise the babies. They get to have the look of this perfect family.
Sure.
They get to put that off. But that is not just homosexual men. That is
humans.
More in time straight relationships, in my opinion, that I have seen.
Well, it's the same argument that's been used against our community forever, that we're all just so sexually driven. All we are sex-craved maniacs. We just want to have sex all the time, and we're not monogamous, and all we do is cheat. And does that happen? Sure. Do I know that happens with all of my straight friends at the equal rate? My straight friends are hoes sometimes.
Yes.
I mean, I went to college. I went on spring break. It was my straight friends who were acting ridiculous and hooking up left and right. And they should also have the ability to do that, as should gay men, gay women, and everybody in between.
But that's why it's offensive, because you're literally pointing out only homosexual men. And that's where I think it's wrong. And if anything, I think that homosexual men are really, and gay women, are just trying to have a normal, beautiful, not even normal because it's such a use of the word, but how we've been raised, all of us, is like, you're married and you have 2 kids and a white picket fence, and that is stability.
Yeah, like,
what's wrong with gay men and women wanting
my
that?
My dad has been married 4 times. God love him. We're in a good place now. It took us decades to get there. It took him 15 years to say the word gay back to me after I came out to him. It's been a journey. But we're in a good place, so I feel like I can say this. He's been married 4 times. I have a sister who I didn't even find out about till I was probably 15.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out she lived 20 minutes from me in another town. And my cousin, who was a cheerleader in that town, we were going to a football game one night. And she says, hey, I have a surprise for you. Come out onto the field. This girl, my sister, was on the cheerleading squad with her. She's a few years older than me. She's like, hey, this is your sister Dawn. I'm like, huh? She goes, your sister Dawn. Steve's her dad. I was like, wait, what? She's like, Steve's your dad, right? I'm like, yeah. She goes, I'm your sister. I'm your big sister. I'm like, huh? But my dad had that right. And then he just never was a father to her.
Yeah.
Still to this day is not.
Yeah,
been married
actually,
four times, had kids
same.
With many women. And he's allowed to because he's straight.
My dad did the same thing. Married four times. I have an older sister that we really don't have a relationship. He has nothing with. So, you know, I think it's important to just acknowledge that you can make this conversation, but I think it has to be so much more broad and allow heterosexual people. It's a human thing, not a gay thing.
Amen.
Stop it. All right, you guys, well, coming up, it's probably not a good idea to be ahead of the curve on toys. Because they can sometimes be made extremely inappropriate. As an aunt to a niece and nephew, I have a lot to say about this next story, and we'll talk about it coming up next.
Hey now, kids, come gather around. See what
remember when toys were just that? They were just toys. Is this a Skip It theme song?
Skip It was the most ridiculous yet incredible thing I ever had. I'm very clumsy, so we had quite the spills with Skip It.
I didn't know that. I thought you were kind of athletic.
Do you know that I can fall over nothing?
I've never seen you fall. I see you work out on your Instagram all the time. You look great.
I work out really hard.
You go hiking up really treacherous hills.
I go hiking, but I'm not great at paying attention.
Huh.
So
well,
I'll be walking.
That I experience every day.
Listen to me. I have mortified myself. One time, I was at Rose Rabbit Lie singing, and there was like a little perch that I used to sing on, and I had to come down the stairs. Gotta go up the stairs and down the stairs. And I went down the stairs, missed the step, fell off the perch. My dress was over my head, and I was still singing because I'm a professional.
Sounds about right.
I hurt myself so bad, but I wouldn't leave. And that's just one of many. Like,
I went to go see Beach Blanket Babylon up in San Francisco. Shout out to our listeners up in the Bay Area. A couple years back, a friend took me for my birthday, and I was trying to do Instagram stories. And you know how San Francisco, it's really windy. The streets are all really curvy and hilly. And while I was walking backwards or forwards, I don't even remember how I was walking, I ran into a fire hydrant and fell into the street and dropped my phone.
Like, oh,
so
my God.
I've been there too.
Yeah.
But the great thing about something like Skip It, though, Skip It was a way for you to exercise and count your numbers.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
And so you were doing something physical while you're playing with this toy. Nowadays, I feel like parents get their kids an iPad with the little rubber handles on it, and they just play games all the time.
My childhood was so physical. I was talking about the moon shoes with you, the ones that you would bounce like you were on the moon.
Okay.
Bikes were a big deal.
Those are great toys.
Uh-huh.
Well, now Fisher-Price has dropped a whole line of COVID-themed work-from-home toys from kids, and I don't know how I feel about this. It's called the My Home Office Set for $24.99. You can get a wooden smartphone and headset. The headset actually works, by the way. It actually makes noises. Mm-hmm. A to-go coffee cup and a plastic red laptop, which comes with stick-on apps that depict a calendar, a bar graph, a chart, and a kitty wearing glasses. This is a little bit weird for me.
Why?
It's a little bit weird. I don't know that I think I want our 3, 4, 5, and 6-year-olds to be planning for their long-term career. On one hand, I understand teaching kids to be bosses and to prepare them for the world. I get that. At that age, though, I don't want them worrying about collecting a paycheck and sitting at a desk for 8 hours a day is not good for the human body.
Okay, but first of all, let me say this. That would be like saying, in my opinion, that then it's like weird that we have created for 3 and 4-year-olds like the kitchenette set where you're like learning how to cook. Like that could easily be like your stay-at-home mom. Or the laundry set
where you practice
doing laundry.
Sure, I agree with all of those things. It plays off the conversation we had about Tracy Ellis Ross talking about doing these lady chores on camera on the show Black-ish. But a to-go coffee cup for a 4-year-old? That's weird to me.
I remember there was a museum in Vegas that I grew up going to, and it was amazing because you used to have this fake money, and you would go into the grocery store, and you would have to put the groceries in your basket, and then you'd have to learn how to spend your money and use your money, and it was one of my favorite things to do when I went to the museum. I was obsessed with it. I loved being a grown-up at such a young age. I think it's okay. No kid, my niece isn't going to sit because my sister-in-law works at home now on a laptop with a to-go coffee. And Natalia now will grab her phone and she'll have full meetings on her phone the way that she watches my sister-in-law. And she'll go, I said no, and no, not to the other.
But as adults, how often do we do like social media cleanses or we put our phone away for dinner because we want to communicate with our friends? We're going to teach our kids that they need to have a cell phone in their hands at age 4? I mean, there's other things like you mentioned, like the kitchen thing. A little chef set. That, yeah, you could say they are going to grow up and be a chef. But also, chef is art. You're creating art with food. I don't know that teaching kids how to practice being on a Zoom conference call at age 4, I don't see that as the same.
Listen, I have more of a conflict with a story that's not even been told on this show, but it's a Trolls doll. It's Poppy.
Okay,
My niece is obsessed with Poppy and the Trolls. And she had a doll, and it didn't even really hit big mainstream media, but the doll talks to you, and she says, hi, I'm Poppy. You know, whatever the kids do.
As a doll would.
But when you pull the pants down, there's a button on the bum.
Uh-oh.
And when you press that button, it makes very sexual sounds.
That's like, problematic.
Nasty. And it ended up getting caught, and they took them off the shelves, and we got rid of Poppy real quick.
Well, we could talk about problematic toys tomorrow.
With that.
Well, let's talk about that tomorrow.
All right,
problematic
let's do
toys.
It.
Justin's problematic got a seven-month child, seven-month-old child.
Yeah.
Is that how you say it?
Yeah, I'm getting him a laptop and a tablet right now.
Okay, stop. Michaela has a great opportunity for all of our lady listeners right now. You have a chance to win part of $1 million on Twitter. She has that story for you and what's popping in just a moment. But first and foremost, I want to tell you that right now, children and their families all over Southern California are going to bed hungry. That is not acceptable. So Channel Q and Radio.com, we've decided to do something about it. We have a super simple way for you to help feed local students and their families. All you have to do is grab your phone, text the word NEED, N-E-E-D, to 76278 to give a buck and put food in the mouth of a hungry kid and their loved ones. We went down and volunteered with this organization as part of our Feed Our Families initiative, the Grab and Go sites. There are 63 of them in Southern California, all over Los Angeles County, and it really was an impressive, impressive operation. They've served millions and millions of meals to needy families. Just $1 can make a huge difference. Also, all this week, Ralph's Grocery Stores and Food for Less are going to match all donations up to $50,000. So every dollar you give gets doubled. So now is the time to give. To learn more about our Feed Our Families on our socials, head over to wearechannelq.com, look at our social media and find out more. And just and give what you can.
Yeah, absolutely.
Two big celebrities are giving in a major way right now. What's going on, Michaela Gordon?
I'm obsessed with this story. Now, we have been just receiving and receiving from Cardi B and Meg Thee Stallion since they came out with WAP. It's one of my favorite songs. Women are going crazy. And if we were in the clubs right now, it's all they'd be playing. But unfortunately, I listen to it on my drive from work to home to work to home and then in my living room. However, Cardi B and Meg Thee Stallion are even giving more. Now, Cardi B gave Meg Thee Stallion a gift just the other day. She gifted her with a Birkin with a tiger painted on it.
That's not cheap.
And not at all. And on the back it said, thank you for everything, Meg. Love, Cardi. So they're clearly friends. They adore each other. And now they're giving back to their female listeners. They've teamed up with Cash App to give away $1 million on Twitter. And they said to everyone supporting WAP, we see you. We're partnering with Twitter and Cash App to celebrate all the powerful women out there by giving away a total of $1 million. How can some money help you or a woman you know right now? Tell us. So women who tweet hashtag WAP party along with their hashtag will have a chance to receive a portion of the money through Cash App. And I think that's amazing. Now, the girls are from the Bronx, Cardi, and of course, Meg is from Houston. And they really are insisting on hitting this song hard with female empowerment. That was the point. And they want to continue empowering other women. As we know, especially in this pandemic, all the kind of money helps. Anything helps right now. And particularly some of, you know, these women out there are doing the very best they can, but they could use some help. And I love this. I think it's great.
I think it's fantastic. Also, I want a Birkin bag now. I'm over here Googling them while you're talking.
No, they're so expensive. You have to, you can't just go in and buy a Birkin bag.
And
this
is custom, too. So I can't even imagine the price tag
on this
thing.
Oh, 100%. Well, listen, if you are a lady who loves WAP, go on to Twitter and put your cash tag in, and you'll have the chance to win some of that $1 million. Listen, I might do it.
Some Birkin bags cost up to $500,000.
Oh, they're so expensive.
What?
You don't understand, because Offset has treated Cardi with a lot of Birkin bags, but you cannot just buy a Birkin bag.
This was a custom Hermes Birkin bag that she gave. Ooh,
yeah, but money. You have to be like a, you have to be.
I can't just go online and just buy one.
Yeah, you can't. It's not like a thing.
Oh,
so,
no. Well, there goes my afternoon.
All right, you guys. Well, coming up, it is Therapy Thursdays, and we're talking with our very own Dr. Milo, discussing the logic and mindset of those who are suicidal and how you can help either yourself or your loved ones during such a difficult time. We'll continue that conversation coming up next.
Coming up this hour on The Morning Beat, it is Therapy Thursdays. We're talking to our Dr. Milo Dotson about depression and suicide and how to have conversations with loved ones who might be going through a rough time, as many of us are right now. And then that's in about 15 minutes. And then in about 30 minutes from right now, we're talking about an interesting new way to still find those frightful moments during Halloween this year. We're recreating the haunted house in a really, really COVID sort of way. You're going to love this story. So stick around for that if you're a fan of being terrified, as I am. Now, Michaela Gordon, news on the beat. You've got a story about a judge just made a ruling on Trump's taxes. What do you have for us?
So President Donald Trump's effort to fight a subpoena for his tax records issued by the Manhattan District Attorney was rejected on Thursday by a federal judge in New York, handing another loss to the president in a high-profile case that has already made its way to the Supreme Court. Now, U.S. District Judge Victor Marrero said that the president failed to show that the subpoena would pose an unfair burden, citing in favor of Manhattan D.A. Cy Vance Jr., who has said his office is pursuing an investigation of potential violations of state law. Trump is likely to appeal the decision to a higher court. Now, the subpoena directed to the president's longtime accounting firm seeks the president's personal and business records, including tax returns dating to 2011. The ruling comes a month after the Supreme Court rejected the president's earlier claims of absolute immunity from state criminal subpoenas. While the top court rejected the immunity argument, it said the president was entitled to object to the subpoena on alternative grounds. That's so wild. Is it going to happen?
Are we going to get the tax returns? The election's 75 days away.
Nobody knows. All right, another news. White House Coronavirus Task Force member Dr. Anthony Fauci, the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, confirmed to CNN that he had surgery this morning to remove a polyp on his vocal cord. Now, Fauci, one of the most vocal members of the task force, took part in numerous interviews and online events this week. He's previously addressed his vocal cord issues, telling the Economic Club of Washington in April that when you get your voices damaged a little, I probably have a polyp there. The only way to get better is to keep your mouth shut. I'll tell you what, as a singer, the polyps are the scariest thing you could ever get as a singer. It is like, it's the one thing that you're
like. Is that what happened to Julie Andrews years ago? Why she can't sing anymore? I know she had issues with her vocal cords and the surgeries.
I don't know if that's what happened to Julie Andrews, but I know it's happened to a lot of people that I know.
How does that happen? What happens?
It's just from singing correctly for so long and not taking care of your voice. And you can, I mean, I know singers who have been able to, you know, reconstruct their vocal cords. And sometimes they even sound better, but the amount of work and dedication that takes, it's...
Well, speaking of vocal cords, we saw an inspiring speech last night from former Congresswoman Gabby Giffords of Arizona at the DNC. We're going to talk to Jarrett Hill about that in the next hour, but she was literally shot in the head and had to learn how to walk, how to talk again, and she gave a speech that, that took a lot of heart and a lot of guts.
Yeah, we have some audio.
America needs all of us to speak out, even when you have to fight to find the words. We are at a crossroads. We can let the shooting continue, or we can act. We can protect our families, our future. We can vote. We can be on the right side of history. We must elect Joe Biden.
Talk about like just having the courage and the wherewithal to come back from something like that and to give that speech on that platform.
I know it. All right, well, let's get into a little weather, shall we? It's going to be a high of 80 in New York today, a high of 91 in LA, which oddly is a little bit cooler than it's been the past week. A high of 112 in Vegas, oy vey, 114 in Palm Springs, and 96 in Houston.
There you have it.
Now, why don't you just give us a vibe of the day?
You are a magnet to incredible opportunities. Life is about to get very good for you.
I love that.
And life is good for me right now. It's good for you, which is why we know it's so important for us to do what we can to give back. We went down and helped our Feed Our Families initiative in Southern California the other day. And right now, children all over Southern California are struggling. Michaela Gordon, why don't you tell them about that a bit?
Well, right now, because they're struggling all over the Southern California area, if you go to channelqandradio.com, they have an easy way for you to help feed local students and their families. It is so simple. All you have to do is text the word need to 76278 to give a dollar only. I mean, you could obviously give so much more, but a dollar to help put food in the mouth of a hungry kid and their loved ones. Just a dollar. If you want to learn more about this for yourself, head on over to WeirdChannelQ.com. I will say in my own personal story that I grew up not having any money. We were constantly trying to make it work. My mother did a really good job, despite everything, to make it work. But I don't think that any parent or child should ever wonder where their next meal is coming
from. Ever. Absolutely not. And all this week, we have a really super exciting opportunity. We've partnered with Radio.com has partnered with Ralph's and Food for Less, and they're going to match every donation up to $50,000. So every dollar you give gets doubled this week.
Make it happen. Yeah. It's amazing. And it's so important, especially as an aunt now. Like, if you're not a parent, think of your nieces and nephews, your baby cousins. It's a lot of things you can do. All right, well, coming up, we're joined on Therapy Thursdays with Dr. Milo. We're discussing the logic and mindset of those who are suicidal, how you can ask the right questions, and how you can possibly save somebody's life. Coming up next.
You're listening to The Morning Beat for Therapy Thursdays. We've got our Dr. Milo Dodson on the line. Thanks, Doc, for being here with us.
We had an
interesting discussion yesterday, and we were talking about suicide, actually. And we interviewed the author and the former lover of a woman named Atlantis Black, who was a musician. She took her life. They decided to share her story in this book. And they said through her experience that she said, look, I don't believe I'm meant to be on Earth for that long. She took her life at, I believe, 31, 32 yeah. years old. And they were at peace with that. Because she said, this was my time. Is that, and it got us kind of wondering, is that a mindset that's actually possible? Is that unhealthy? I'm curious to know your thoughts on that.
Sure, sure. So I think as it relates to suicidal ideation, depression, what's really important to point out here is that in conversations or even in movies and art, what we want to stay away from is glorifying the death by suicide. So, for example, in pop culture, a lot of people always ask me and have questions about 13 Reasons Why. Mm. And so the student in that movie who died by suicide had a shrine, and there was kind of this like sensationalized version of that. Mm-hmm. And I think in these conversations as well, we want to stay away from perpetuating this myth that you have to die by suicide, or instead what we do want to instill is hope. And we want to validate the pain that people may be in, or in this tragic case, being able to actually ask, hey, like, what's going on? Are you thinking about suicide? And I know sometimes for people it's concerning or anxiety provoking to ask that question because we don't know how to ask. But, you know, all the research, and this will be the last thing I say here, all the research points out that how you ask the question is less important than if you ask the question.
Mm. Wow. That's
powerful.
Big. Well, I want to ask you, you know, we're in a global pandemic and so many people are being affected in many ways, including finances, which is a really big deal when you're trying to provide for a family or just even yourself. So some people who have may never been suicidal could be really starting to feel the effects of depression and suicide. How do you start a conversation with somebody who may not even know that they're in such a dark place?
Yeah, I think it really does start with listening, but kind of connected to this questioning as well, right? So like after we ask the questions, after we ask like, hey, what's been going on? We really, really want to listen with a non-judgmental attitude, because sometimes when people ask questions, there's almost this weighted expectation that you're then going to just say, oh, well, you shouldn't be feeling like that. You have so much going for you. Or, oh, you know what? This pandemic, it sucks, but it's going to get better. And so we really just want to be present, to listen, and to almost instill and provide that hope, saying that, look, I'm here with you. We're going to get through this together, instead of just waiting to talk again. So you all have heard me say this before, but listen twice and speak once. So when we're listening, we're not just waiting to talk again, and we're also really affirming what somebody may be going through instead of just minimizing their experience.
I was always taught that God gave you two ears and one mouth for a reason. You should listen.
Well, you better listen
twice as much as you talk. I'm always curious to know, because I've struggled with depression my entire life. I remember it first happening probably around, you know, my adolescence, maybe when I was 12, 13, 14 years old. And for me, though, oftentimes, it's situational. It was seasonal. When I grew up in Ohio, I would get depressed during the winter when it was dark and, you know, cold for a while, and then I was happier in the summer. As an adult, it's more situational. It usually has to do with finances or my work or my stress. For some people, though, it seems like there's just a predisposition to a darker mindset or a more somber, melancholy sort of mindset. For people that are like that and we want to help them out in our lives, how do we help? If they are just comfortable in a space and maybe not even fully aware that they're in that space, is it our right to even try to help, and how do we help?
Well, I think it really starts with asking, like, hey, what would be helpful for you to receive here, and what would be helpful for me to be able to offer here? Because kind of similar to what you pointed out, sometimes the depth or the intensity of depressed mood can vary. Sometimes that can come up in different situations, or like you said, seasonal affective disorder. But if people know ahead of time that certain situations, if certain triggers are going to increase that depressed mood, then trying to plan for that ahead of time, saying like, look, I know that X and Y may be happening next week. I want to spend some time with you prior to that. And it's always, always not just important, but necessary to show up for our loved ones and be consistent in that showing up, being consistent in listening and validating what they're going through.
Mm. Dr. Milo, you're always so amazing, and we appreciate you. I also want to remind anybody that's listening, also with no judgment, because we love you and we've all dealt with our own depression and anxiety on this show, you can help prevent suicide. The Lifeline, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, provides 24/7 free and confidential support for people in distress, prevention, and crisis, resources for you or your loved ones, and best practices from professionals. You can call the number 1-800-273-8255. Again, that number is 1-800-273-8255. And we support you if you do need to make that phone call.
And Dr. Milo Dotson, what is your website again?
Oh, my website is PHDODSON. And you can also find me on Twitter and Instagram at that same for a handle.
Fantastic.
We love you, Dr. Milo. Thank you so much.
Lots of love to you and everyone listening this morning.
Ooh, I love that sound. Summer is about to come to an end. Halloween is right around the corner.
I am so ready.
I'm obsessed with a good horror film and a good horror scenario. You know my personal dream in life
is to be in a horror film.
In a real-life horror film and not know it till the end when I survive.
You watch everyone die in your family.
I do. I want to see my friends die.
Weird.
I want to see them running through the woods and getting like murdered in the woods. And I save that one brunette and maybe one other dorky friend. And that's how...
And you save the brunette because you say the blondes always die.
Blondes always die.
Mm-hmm.
Virgins always live. I would probably be doomed. But still, that's neither here nor there. So, I want to ask you.
Yeah.
Let's put yourself in this horror film scenario. For a moment, you're locked inside of a car. Zombies are approaching, and they're trying to get into the car. What do you do?
Well, here's the thing. I am a large lover of haunted houses.
Yeah?
I love putting myself in those positions. And actually, last year, Lisa and I went to this haunted house, and it was so terrifying, and we didn't know how physical it could get, and you went to like grab these things at the top,
yeah.
And they electrocuted us.
They're real. It's
they
real.
They electrocuted us.
I used to go to Halloween Horror Nights at Universal.
Oh, yeah.
And they have the haunted mazes
everywhere.
Good ones there.
They're really good.
Okay, well, that's going to be a little bit tricky this year because of COVID-19.
Obviously, I know. So what do we do?
So here's a workaround that does involve the car and the zombies I mentioned just a moment ago. So a company in Japan has created a haunted house. It's a haunted house and horror event production company. They've created the first ever drive-in haunted house in downtown Tokyo. It's filled with pure terror. also follows all social distancing guidelines. So what happens is basically, you know, you've seen drive-in movie theaters making a comeback this year, drive-in concerts. This is sort of in that vein. You drive into a garage and all these actors, zombies, actors, they come out, it goes pitch black, and they come out and they're throwing blood all over your car. They're climbing on your car. They're trying to break in and terrify you while you're in your car.
Okay, here's the thing. Don't touch my car. That's where I'd have to, but I'd have to, if they offered
it. It gets messy.
You know what I'm saying? And also, like, you're putting your big body on my car. Like, what if you break my window?
Well, if you don't even owe a car, if you might want to use your car. Maybe you can rent a car for $85.
I would do that.
Okay, this whole thing costs $75 for a whole car load of people. But there's also add-ons, because it's so 2020. There's always an add-on, right? You can also pay to have them clean your car and then pay an additional fee to have them deep clean your car afterwards. So, but that's where it loses me a little bit. So you're scared out of your mind, and then these zombies are like, let me wash your car. It's like, or do you drive
that's
out,
true.
And
there's that's like, kind of stupid.
Like girls in bikinis doing an old school car wash for like yeah. to raise money. Like, what does that
you
look like?
You know what, though? I would do it. I would do it. I feel like my favorite, one of my favorites holidays is Halloween. I love
you like dressing
idea.
Up and wearing like
yeah.
revealing outfits.
Like Christmas
though.
Is my number one.
Same.
But then Halloween could be number two.
Aren't you half Jewish?
Yeah, my father's Jewish.
That Christmas thing always gets me. I love it, though.
Well, because if your mother's not Jewish, then you are your mother's religion.
Oh,
so we were raised Catholic.
Oh, now I get it.
So my father was Jewish, but he insisted that we knew Judaism.
Well, don't you worry, though, because if you're here in Southern California, you might be able to go to something similar.
Tell me.
It's not just in Tokyo. So there's
take me.
Urban legends of Southern California are rolling into Save Halloween this year. So with all these events canceled, like I said, Universal Halloween Horror Nights, Queen Mary usually does a Dark Harbor event. That's canceled as well. Disney, everything is canceled. So this is what we're doing now. In Costa Mesa, there's a drive-through haunted house experience called Urban Legends of Southern California. It's going to conjure up all of SoCal's most terrifying urban legends, cursed souls, and monsters that have haunted residents for generations. Whether it's the mysterious winds that howl through the streets, or the unnatural presences that make your hair stand up, familiar stories will be brought to life through a series of thrills. So all you have to do is purchase a ticket. You arrive in your vehicle at the time slot, because, of course, you have to be socially distanced.
Yeah, of course.
From there, you're guided through a journey of immersive scenes, dazzling special effects, and live performances, all from the comfort of your car. Okay.
I'm doing it.
Early bird tickets are only $49.99.
I'm doing it. I'm interested to see how
and
this
it
goes.
And it lasts 45 minutes.
Well, this is a conversation I want to have now, too. Okay, so when we did Feed Our Families, mm-hmm. and they came to get, you know, of course, their food, and we distributed it to them, we had to put it on a table. They had to physically get out of the car.
We had to step back
grab
and
grab the food and go, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what is it going to look like this Halloween? Like, we've got now an answer for maybe haunted houses, but what about trick-or-treating? Is that going to be the same thing?
Oh, that's not
going to
happen. There's no trick-or-treating this year. There's no way.
But could you make trick-or-treating happen the same way they've done Feed Our Families, where you have a table outside and kids can still come up and grab little packages?
Maybe
you could. Now, also the question would be, because now my head's going into aunt mode, do I want my niece and nephew to be eating somebody else's candy or food?
Yeah. Are you going to disinfect all that candy? Should you? Studies were mixed early on in the pandemic. It said we were supposed to disinfect all of our groceries. Now we're hearing we don't really need to do that anymore. I don't know.
Listen to me. When I say I want to get my niece and nephew candy, what I'm saying is that's my stash that I get every year.
Yeah, of
and
course.
And I blame it on them needing it, but it's me. So
of
I
course.
Need to find a solution.
But I do like these workarounds. I like these creative solutions they're coming up with.
I think
ahead of time. Also, they're trying to make money, let's be real, but also entertain us.
Listen, I'm super for it, and I love it. I think it's great.
I feel like you'd get out of the car and run, though.
I would.
It would ruin the whole thing.
I would.
Have to shut down the whole operation.
It is 100% who I am. All right, Jason, well, coming up, Chrissy Teigen is calling out Netflix's Selling Sunset, but those girls have a rebuttal, and we're going to be talking about it in What's Poppin' coming up next.
Kids got a fun story involving Chrissy Teigen, sort of, in What's Poppin' in just a moment, but not so fun here on my end. Because right now, there are families, children in particular, going to bed hungry all over Southern California, and that is not acceptable. So Channel Q and Radio.com have a super simple way for you to help feed local students and their families in need. All you have to do is grab your phone. Probably don't even have to grab it. It's probably in your hand right now, as they often are. And text the word NEED, N-E-E-D, to 76278 to give a buck and put food in the mouth of a hungry kid and their loved ones. Just $1 makes a huge difference. Learn more about Feed Our Families by heading over to our socials and wearechannelq.com. Also, right now, Ralph's Groceries and Food for Less are matching all donations up to $50,000 this week only. So this is the time to give. Your donation will get doubled. $1, $5, $10. No amount is too small to help a family in need.
We love it. We love to see it.
So what do you have for us and what's popping?
Okay, babe. Well, we know that Chrissy Teigen loves reality television, and she's always tweeting to some of her favorite reality television stars. But Selling Sunset has just really taken over. We actually had the opportunity to interview one of the real estate agents, Christine Quinn, last year. Let's take a listen.
Thank you so much. You know, we're so happy to all be part of this, obviously. And you're absolutely right. I think there is a stigma of, you know, women in the workplace, and they have to look a certain way, they have to act a certain way, and they have to say certain things. And I think that's why people love the show so much, because, you know, we say silly things and we do silly things and we do everything at the end of the day to sell a house and to get that job done. But we're not, you know, your status quo housewife. And I think people love that.
Well, either is Chrissy Teigen. She's not your status quo housewife.
No, she's not. But going back to what Christine Quinn said, you know, she's not your typical, nor are the other women on the show, your typical, you know, real estate agent. Enough so that Chrissy Teigen said, are you even real estate agents? Essentially, she put out a tweet that said, I will say I look at real estate a lot and have never seen any of these people. And I've asked agents before and they haven't seen them either. So then she went on to say, maybe I also know everyone on TV plays up a character. They're all doing that. You guys are super mad at people who are just in on the joke. So she was essentially questioning if they're even real estate agents because she's never seen them before and she's bought a lot of property. So the girls, two of the women from Selling Sunset, have clapped back, not in a rude way, but they said Maya Vander, who's one of the characters, said that she sells very luxury homes, nothing less than $9 million. So maybe that's why Chrissy hasn't seen her.
That's shady.
She said no shade.
That's shady.
And the other character on the show said, I actually sold a house down the street from Chrissy and John. So I'm not, you know, like that hard to find. So.
Well, my cousin and her husband both work in real estate, and they know like the Altmans and like all these guys you see on these $1 million listing shows. They know them. They're all in the same circles. They all work. What they do say, though, about these shows is that they do inflate sometimes the costs and the commissions. They stage those scenes a lot of times.
Right.
And I know a common mutual friend of ours years ago was doing an episode with Josh Flagg. They were getting a property in West Hollywood, a bar restaurant property, with Candace Cain, actually.
Oh, wow.
And they staged the entire scene. Like they were building the, it's like they're buying this thing. So part of it's
fake. Television babies, a lot of it is fake. A lot of it is set up. But the fact of the matter is you can't not be a real estate agent.
Yeah, but they got the show because they already worked in real estate.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you know, come on, Chrissy. Don't call them out too much. Stop it, you little brat. All right, you guys, coming up in our final hour, we are recapping, of course, the DNC, and we've got our very own Jarrett Hill to help us do that, from Billie Eilish to Hillary Clinton to our very own Kamala Harris. It was a big night, and we're talking about it coming up next.
It's been quite a wild morning here on the Morning Beat. Breaking news coming as we find out that Steve Bannon, a former strategist from the Trump administration, and three others have been arrested this morning. We also heard that Dr. Anthony Fauci has polyps on his vocal cords. He's had those taken care of as of this morning. He had a medical treatment done, sending him nothing but the best. Also, this hour coming up, we are joined by one of our favorite people here at Channel Q. He's a political strategist and an expert in his own right. Jarrett Hill, he's joining us to break down night three of the DNC. It was Kamala's night, but we also heard from Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, Elizabeth Warren, and some personal stories, a speech from Gabby Gifford. We have all of that audio coming up for you. So many touching stories and just powerful, powerful moments from some of the heavy hitters from the Democratic Party and beyond. So stick around for that. That starts in 15 minutes from right now as Jarrett Hill joins us to break down, as I said, night three of the DNC. Tonight's the final night.
The final night, one the more. Final countdown.
We've got Julie Louis-Dreyfus hosting the fourth night.
I love her so much.
I kind of want her to host as Selena Meyer, her Veep character. That's what I really want to see. Don't think it's going to happen, but we will finally hear from Joe Biden. We saw him on the stage last night as Kamala accepted her nomination. She was out there with her husband, and then he and, of course, Dr. Jill Biden walked out onto that stage. So we've seen him throughout the week, but we haven't really heard from him at length. He's going to be giving, obviously, the biggest keynote of the week tonight as he accepts the nomination for president of the United States from the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. But Michaela Gordon, shall we get into news on the beat? I believe we actually have some audio even from President Trump, if you want to talk about that.
Yeah, I'm going to get into Steve Bannon. So former White House chief strategist Steve Bannon has been arrested after being charged with defrauding hundreds of thousands of donors through their campaign, We Build the Wall. Bannon, along with three of his associates, were indicted by investigators at the U.S. Southern District of New York today. They allege that the group of conservative leaders defrauded donors, and that led to raising more than $25 million to build a wall along the southern border of the United States. Now, prosecutors said Bannon and others defrauded hundreds of thousands of donors to the online campaign by falsely assuring them the organizers were not taking a penny of donation money. Those representations were false. In truth, according to the indictment, Bannon took at least $1 million to pay personal expenses. Now, President Trump just weighed in on the situation from the Oval Office. Here's what he had to say.
Maybe looking for funds, but you'll have to see what happens. I think it's a very sad thing for Mr. Bannon. I think it's surprising.
Is it surprising? Is it really? And is it a sad thing for Mr. Bannon? He's your buddy, Steve.
Yeah.
You guys were buddies.
Give me a break. All right, you guys. Well, speaking of President Trump, President Donald Trump's effort to fight a subpoena for his tax records issued by the Manhattan District Attorney was rejected this morning by a federal judge in New York, handing another loss to the president in a high-profile case that has already made its way to the Supreme Court. U.S. District Judge Victor Marrero said that the president failed to show that the subpoena would pose an unfair burden, citing in favor of Manhattan D.A. Cy Vance Jr., who has said his office is pursuing an investigation of potential violations of state law. Trump is likely to appeal the decision to a higher court. Now, the subpoena directed to the president's longtime accounting firm seeks the president's personal and business records, including tax returns dating to 2011. The ruling comes a month after the Supreme Court rejected the president's earlier claims of absolute immunity from state criminal subpoenas. While the top court rejected the immunity argument, it said the president was entitled to object to the subpoena on alternative grounds.
He was saying 4 years ago, as he was running for president over and over again, that he would release his taxes as soon as he were able to. It was complicated.
Gosh, yeah.
And then he just does not do
it. He just refuses.
What are you hiding?
I don't know.
He's not a billionaire.
Well, that's
spoiler
real.
Alert.
All right, well, finishing off news today, White House Coronavirus Task Force member Dr. Anthony Fauci, the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, confirmed to CNN that he had surgery this morning to remove a polyp on his vocal cord. Fauci, one of the most vocal members of the task force, took part in numerous interviews and online events this week. He's previously addressed his vocal cord issues, telling the Economic Club of Washington in April that when you get your voices damaged a little, I probably have a polyp there. The only way to get better is to keep your mouth shut.
Well, Trump tried to keep his mouth shut for about a solid month recently.
Yeah.
But he's always sounded like he has like a little bit of a frog in his throat, a little bit of raspiness to him.
But
so.
I like it. I think it's sexy.
Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, let's get into a little weather. It's going to be a high of 80 today, a high of 80 today in New York.
Just anywhere?
Anywhere.
Just somewhere in the country. It's 80
it's
degrees
hot.
Today. So get ready.
A high of 91 in LA. I can't believe I did that. A high of 82 in Atlanta. A high of 82 in Baltimore. And a high of 75 in Buffalo. So it's going to be nice. It's going to be nice in Buffalo. That's a nice
Except for you're in Buffalo.
Yeah, and we're in LA.
I've never been there. So.
You have in Buffalo, New York?
I don't know what Buffalo's like.
I like people from Buffalo.
Yeah?
If you're listening, I like you guys.
It's a good word.
Yeah.
Buffalo.
Buffalo.
Very American.
All right, give us a five of a day.
You are a magnet to incredible opportunities. Life is about to get very good for you, especially if you're in Buffalo, apparently, because the weather is beautiful there
and
today.
And we like people from Buffalo.
Go outside and enjoy your day and be safe. Wear a mask.
All right, you guys. Well, coming up, our very own Jarrett Hill is joining us to talk about last night's DNC from Billie Eilish to Gabby Giffords to Kamala Harris. It was emotional and incredibly impactful. We'll talk about it coming up next.
I was born.
Come on, Jay Hud, taking us to church last night on night 3 of the DNC. Here to help us break it all down, we've got a dear friend and family member to the show, Jarrett Hill, our political expert. Thanks so much for being
First
here, Jarrett. We know you're super busy right
yes,
now.
Yes, of course.
Having these conversations.
I'm just going to say very quickly on a whole personal note, love you, miss you, love following you on social media. If you don't, at Jarrett Hill, you speak so many amazing things and a lot of perspectives that I bring to our show. So thank you so much for that.
Thanks for using your voice. Well, we miss
of
you
course,
too.
Of course.
I want to give you a big hug. I know this is probably your favorite and also most anxious time of the year as we ramp up 75 days out from the election.
Mm-hmm.
So let's break down last night. One of the things that really stood out to me, a couple of things that really tugged at my heart, and I think the DNC has done a really great job at this all week long of putting these like personal stories in. This young girl who wrote a letter to President Trump about her father, who is a U.S. veteran. Take a listen and let's discuss.
My dad thought you would protect military families, so he voted for you in 2016, Mr. President. He says he won't vote for you again after what you did to our family.
The wife of a U.S. Marine veteran was deported to Mexico.
Instead of protecting us, you tore our world apart.
My mom is a good person, and she's not a criminal.
How effective do you think this strategy is towards making a case against Donald Trump?
That's a really difficult question to answer, because the real thing is, like, Donald Trump supporters are so baked in the cake, right? They're mm-hmm. probably not getting to even see a lot of this stuff. One of the things that's been infuriating to me as we go through the days of this convention is I will switch over and see how Fox is covering this content. And, like, so much of it they don't even air. They'll cut away from something if it becomes negative about Trump. And so, like, these messages that are so impactful, that are such a strong story, and like that young lady's story was just incredibly like heart-wrenching, but also like, you know, that she's telling you her story, and you think that, you know, people that are swing voters are probably the most susceptible to being able to like receive these messages, but I really want to just point out like how much of this Democratic convention has really focused on hope and the idea of, you know, inclusion and wanting to bring more people together. Whereas the Trump campaign and the Republicans have always used fear and anger, and we would imagine that they're probably going to do that same thing next week when their convention comes. So I think it is effective because it's definitely moving all of us. But I have to wonder how many people on the other side are even seeing or hearing it.
You know, I didn't even take that perspective at all. And if you sort of go back to the Black Lives Matter movement, I think it's the same reason that Black people were like, listen, white people need to start talking about this. We've already done it. We don't need to preach to our community. And maybe that's how we relate to how the DNC has been. Everything they're saying is effective and it's heartwarming. But also, is it changing the minds of Republicans where we really need the vote?
And also, does it need to? Do we need to get Republican voters to vote Democrat? Or do we just need to get more Democratic voters to show up?
I mean, I think that's definitely like the you know, what is it, $64,000 question or whatever from back in the day. But like, last night's you know, theme was about voting, which really speaks to that point, right? Wanting to make sure people have a plan to vote, make sure that they know that what their deadlines are for getting their mail-in ballots if they need them. I'm always reminding people that if you have a mail-in ballot, you don't have to mail it back in. You can go drop it off at your precinct. So they spent a lot of time wanting to make sure that people understood how voting should go this year or can go for them this year, because it's going to be such an unusual year with COVID-19. So I absolutely am with you that, you know, we don't necessarily need Republicans to flip so much as we need more Democrats or more independents or just more people in general to come out and vote in general.
Well, I'd like to take a little bit of audio. There was an incredible story told by a woman named Gabby Giffords. Let's take a listen to what she had to say and then recap.
America needs all of us to speak out, even when you have to fight to find the words. We are at a crossroads. We can let the shooting continue, or we can act.
Former congresswoman from Arizona had to literally learn how to walk and how to speak again. And to give that speech last night, that was just a powerful moment, yes?
My goodness. So I watched it the first time, and I was like, this is a moment. And then they re-aired a clip of it last night, and I almost started to cry. Like, for people that don't remember, Gabby Giffords was shot, I believe, in the head at an event, right? Like, by a person while she was a sitting representative. And lost really everything and really had to completely come back. And if I'm not mistaken, the words that she used last night were, you know, sometimes it's difficult for me to find the words, but I've never lost my voice. And I just thought that was so important. Like, they did such a fantastic job of talking about ending gun violence, right? But Republicans will take that and flip it about taking your guns. And so I just thought Gabrielle Giffords last night was just incredibly, incredibly powerful. moments I have on the air last night. She was fantastic.
Well, to your point a moment ago, Jarrett, about the importance of understanding how to vote and coming up with a voting plan. Hillary Clinton actually got out there last night, which I was really curious to see how she was going to handle that, because she's still got a chip on her shoulder, which I understand. I didn't think her speech was fantastic, but there was part that did stand out to me where she talked about coulda, woulda, shoulda.
For 4 years, people have told me, I didn't realize how dangerous he was. I wish I could do it all over, or worst, I should have voted. Look, this can't be another woulda, coulda, shoulda election.
What are your thoughts on that? I feel like it's a powerful message.
Absolutely. And like you said, like Hillary has a chip on her shoulder. So I always think to myself, like, if anybody has a right to be bitter, it would probably be Hillary Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Last night I thought she was effective. Hillary's never been a great orator, and she always says that. But I thought that she was really effective at being able to say, like, you know, this could happen again. And what's really important to me, I sometimes go back and look at, like, the old videos of Hillary Clinton during the 2016 election, and there's this Twitter account called Hillary Warned Us, and, like, Hillary talked about all of these things that we've been going through.
All of it.
She talked about what happens if Donald Trump is the president of the United States and we go into a massive crisis. Are you going to trust him? What's going to happen when we look at immigration? What's going to happen when we look at, you know, issues with race? And she had talked about all of these different things during the 2016 election. So I imagine if there's anyone that has room to be bitter, it would be her. But she also reminded us that it's important for people to get out and vote everywhere because, as she said, Joe and Kamala could win by 3 million votes and still lose. Take it from me.
Mm. Well, speaking of very influential women, we can't forget about Billie Eilish and, of course, Kamala Harris. We'll take a listen to their audio and see how you feel. We're here with our very own Jarrett Hill coming up next.
You don't need me to tell you things are a mess. Donald Trump is destroying our country and everything we care about. We need leaders who will solve problems like climate change and COVID, not deny them. Leaders who will fight against systemic racism and inequality. And that starts by voting for someone who understands how much is at stake. Someone who's building a team that shares our values. It starts with voting against Donald Trump and for Joe Biden.
It's Billie Eilish trying to reach the young voters. She just performed her song, My Future, just a moment ago, and she performed it last night at the DNC. We're joined again by Jarrett Hill, our political expert. It was a big night for not just women in particular, for one woman in particular, Kamala Harris. We're going to talk about her in just a moment. But also, Barack Obama just came out and eviscerated President Trump in a way that I've never really seen. I remember last night one of the commentators on CNN referred to it as a sort of like breaking the emergency glass on a fire extinguisher, sort of, or grabbing the axe sort of moment. We're like, literally the country's on fire and he had no other choice. He talked about Trump having no interest in anything at all and not being able to really do this job. Let's listen to him say in his own words.
For close to 4 years now, he has shown no interest in putting in the work. No interest in finding common ground. No interest in using the awesome power of his office to help anyone but himself and his friends. No interest in treating the presidency as anything but one more reality show that he can use to get the attention he craves.
Ooh. I mean, that says everything. How did you feel about watching that?
I thought Barack Obama last night was incredibly effective in a way that we don't often see him. Like, often he and Michelle Obama will not even use Donald Trump's name, right? But last night he explicitly used his name. But then also, Barack Obama, kind of to what Adrian was saying, like, definitely was issuing a warning, saying, like, I have sat at that desk. I know the things that can happen. And we've heard this also from a couple of other folks, like, things can get worse and they will. Actually, to be completely honest with you, I think that is the thing that concerns me the most. Like, obviously, Donald Trump, I think, is an awful person. I think he's been a terrible president. I think he's been, completely ineffective when we look at things like COVID and various other things. But the thing that really concerns me the most about Donald Trump is looking at how every year since he announced his run for the presidency, not since he became president, every year we have said, like, oh, that year was crap. I can't wait for the new one. And each year has been exponentially worse. And I think to myself, what would the next four be like? Because don't forget, 2020 like has been trash. And it's been one of the worst years that many people have ever seen in their lives.
And Barack Obama
and
gave
that. They were going to ratchet it up.
He gave that speech with the Constitution behind him in Philadelphia. That was a very symbolic sort of statement
from him. Absolutely. Barack Obama was saying to America and Americans, like, you guys, this is an alarm. Like, do not let this moment pass because we don't get it again.
Well, I want to talk about another clip that we're going to share about using military on citizens. Let's take a listen and hear what you have to say.
They understand that in this democracy, the commander-in-chief does not use the men and women of our military who are willing to risk everything to protect our nation as political props to deploy against peaceful protesters on our own soil.
So how did you feel hearing that? Because that's been such a huge discussion, I think, all of for the past 3 or 4 months.
Especially since that Bible in front of the church moment.
Yeah.
What's important to hear is Republicans have always had this kind of stranglehold, if you will, on the idea of patriotism. And they've always used that through the military. And I think that was a moment that really spoke to that, that said, like, the abuses of power are myriad, right? It's not just about finance. It's not just about, you know, the way that he handles, you know, marginalized people. But the way that he has used our military for his own good, right? The way that he has used our law enforcement, the way that he has used our court system, like, he is using it to his benefit to literally go stand in front of a church in this instance, right? He used tear gas, all these things, to go stand in front of a church and hold up a Bible that was not even his in front of a church that did not want him there, right?
Yeah, well, that was boarded up at the time after he tear gassed American citizens. Listen, I think that we're seeing a major shift in politics. You know, you talk about the Republican Party using the military. They've often used religion and family, and the DNC has really been showing off the Biden family, the Harris family, showing religion, showing people of faith. They opened with a convocation on the very first night. But last night was all about a historic night. The first black woman who is of Jamaican and Asian descent.
My crush.
Taking her, accepting her nomination as the VP. Let's listen to Kamala Harris accept the nomination.
I keep thinking about that 25-year-old Indian woman, all of 5 feet tall, who gave birth to me at Kaiser Hospital in Oakland, California. On that day, she probably could have never imagined that I would be standing before you now and speaking these words. I accept your nomination for Vice President of the United States of America.
If it doesn't make you emotional, it gives you all of the chills. And her 5 foot mommy is so, you know, I'll tell you what, I will say this, and then I really want to hear from you because you're the expert here. Whether she wins or she doesn't, what she is doing right now for so many women and women of color is so incredible, and it fires me up as a woman, and I just felt her last night.
Well, I think what's so fantastic about this is so many different things. But, like, number one, I said this on Twitter, I'll say it here. I was born in the same hospital as Kamala Harris at Kaiser in Oakland. And I love to tell people every single time it comes up. So you will hear that again.
As you should.
But what I think is so extraordinary about this moment for Kamala Harris, and it's no secret, like, I did not think she was, like, the best. I don't think she ran the best campaign when she was running for president. And I said that here, I said it in other places. But I do think that Kamala Harris is such a fantastic candidate, right? It's one thing to be to campaign well, it's another to be a good candidate. And I think that she has inspired more than just women. I think little boys need to see this as well, right? I think men need to see this as well. And I think when we see her last night, accepting the nomination to be vice president, it was such an inspirational moment to see this woman, right? To see this woman stand there and reference Alpha Kappa Alpha, her black sorority, to shout out to Oakland, to play Mary J. Blige after her nomination.
Oh, to shout out HBCUs. I mean, that's a huge deal.
Yeah, we loved it.
She was so fantastic. And I heard a lot of folks talk about this last night, and I thought it was important. The coordination of this convention has really, really been extraordinary in a way that, if I'm fully honest, I was not sure it would be. But, like, last night, Barack Obama went on the attack in a way that we've never seen him do before, which really gave Kamala Harris the opportunity to introduce herself.
Yeah, to not do it.
I thought one of the things that kind of frustrated me about her campaign was I felt like she was always on the attack of Donald Trump and always talking about Donald Trump and not talking about herself enough. last night she really got to talk about herself. She got to talk about her parents. She got to talk about where she came from. She got to talk about what she believed in and what she wanted to see.
We got to, yeah, we got to know her. We got to know her little sister.
She got to stand up for herself, but that was through Obama. Like, he really laid it down. And that's nice, because I think that oftentimes we're still living in a world where women have a more difficult time standing up for themselves or their beliefs because they look, you know, like a bitch or something. And not that Kamala is at all, obviously, but the setup was just so beautiful so that we could see her shine. She's always shined to me.
Jarrett
She's
Hill,
the love
you know
of
what?
My life.
We adore you. Keep using your voice. I think it's so awesome that you're born at the same hospital as Kamala. I'm
going to
tell everybody I know that now. But we're going to actually take it into break by Kamala telling us about the women whose shoulders she stands upon last night.
And these women inspired us to pick up the torch and fight on. Women like Mary Church Terrell, Mary Cloyd Bethune, Fannie Lou Hamer, and Diane Nash, Constance Baker Motley, and the great Shirley Chisholm. We're not often taught their stories, but as Americans, we all stand on their shoulders.
Life does indeed go on. Whatever you're going through today, set it aside for just a moment to go on a little happy journey with us, because if there is breath in our lungs, there's still an opportunity to turn things around and to improve our day. So we hope we can do that with you right now, send you off into your day with a little bit of love and light in your heart. Here are a couple inspirational stories for you. I love this, though. We hear so often about endangered species, animals going extinct, and you know, there are conservation groups trying to do something about it. Sometimes it works, sometimes it does not. Well, there's an adorable little mouse sort of a creature. I guess I'll call it a mouse. It's called a shrew, technically. Thought to be extinct since 1968. Not one has been spotted, but one was just found in the Horn of Africa, which is the eastern part of Africa. It's also called the Somali Sengi. It mates for life. Can reach speeds of up to 30 kilometers per hour, this little guy. Sucks up ants with this trunk-like little nose. So he sort of looks a little bit like a mouse, and a little bit like a rat, and a little bit like a mini, mini elephant. But like I said, science thought it was gone as of 1968, but apparently they've just been hiding.
Oh my God,
how
what are you doing down there
adorable
now?
How did they just not know? I love that an animal can be like, for 50 or 60 years or whatever, be like, nah, I don't feel like dealing with people.
Yeah,
so I'm just going to hide under this bush right here. And just my family, we're going to, because y'all are messing things up. Y'all are getting wild right now.
You know what? I'm good.
You got to see the 1960s. What was going on? There's probably some wars going on. Vietnam was happening, yes, in Southeast Asia, here in the United States, the civil rights movement. And these little African mice are like, nope. We're out. We're gonna check out for 50 years. We'll check back in 2020 when things turn around.
I love it. That's
right?
So cute.
Oh, adorable.
Okay, well, this story is super crazy. So, a young girl was climbing and she got stuck. Left. She was left dangling off a 70-foot cliff after her hair got tangled in the equipment.
The climbing equipment.
First of all,
that's a very real danger. I've gone climbing and rappelling.
That's a real danger. Mm-hmm. And with my, like, whether I've had weave or long hair, you know, they say to braid it up or put it in a bun so it never has the opportunity to do
totally
that.
Totally, I'm going to get caught in anything. What does she do?
Yeah, so the Dixie State University football team, who was on an annual trip to Sugarloaf in St. George, Utah.
Not Sugarloaf.
Oh, it was, honey. Heard a panicked man pleading for their help in regards to the young girl. So the football team wasted no time, devised a plan, and were able to pull her up using a system of ropes, essentially saving her life.
That's hot. First, a football team just saved her. I'll tell you what, when I was a young kid, I grew up on a lake, and in our backyard, there was like a slip. It's called a slip, or it's like a dock, a little inland area cut out where you can park your boats. And we had our boat parked behind our house on the lake. Well, it got really stormy one day, the waves got really, really choppy, and the boat filled and flooded, and it sank.
No.
But the water outside in their lake where that boat was parked was maybe 5-6 feet deep. It's not that deep right there in the slip. just so happened that our high school football team, these guys were studs. These guys were like Division I, one of the best teams in the state. I had crushes on all of them.
Naturally.
They happened to be working out, doing outdoor workouts nearby, and there's a beach by where we lived at the time, and they happened to go to that beach to cool off after their workout. So these guys are all in like their little gym shorts, little mesh gym shorts like guys wore in the late 90s, and all shirtless, swimming in the lake. And they came over to help us, and I'm losing my mind. You got to think, I'm probably 13, 14, maybe 15 years old at this time. All these guys who I have a huge crush on are basically naked, trying to lift up, like 15 of these guys, lift up our boat to then bail water out of it and to get, and they did. But while it happened, this is terrible, while it happened.
You drowned yourself for help.
No. The boat was leaking gasoline, and all these guys, like, their private areas were, like, on fire.
Oh,
like, they're itching and burning because this gasoline is just all in the water.
But
and
that's
so,
dedication.
So they're all, like, adjusting themselves, soaking wet, screaming for their lives, and little adolescent AJ, who's confused as all get out already, just enjoyed every single moment of it.
Well, on that note,
it's such an inappropriate story.
But also very inspiring to go into your day
confused.
If you're a gay man.
Yes.
On that note, we are headed out. We hope that you enjoy the rest of your day. We'll be recapping the DNC tomorrow. Also recapping on the inappropriate childhood toys that we played with. I'm not even going to say it. Have a great rest of your day. Wear your mask, wash your hands. We'll see you tomorrow.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.